Welcome to the Spirituality What? Podcast, where we explore the mysteries, joys, and challenges of being spiritual beings navigating our unpredictable human experience we call life here on planet Earth. I'm your friendly guide, Rebecca, ready to jump into our adventure of the day. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Spirituality What? Podcast. My name is Rebecca. It's Wednesday. It's time for another episode. Today, I am excited to introduce you to Janie Lee Grace, who I met through that podcastguest.com website that I've been talking about for months. She's a TEDx speaker, an author, and a coach, and she's known to many as the co-presenter for 24 years on the UK's biggest radio show, BBC Radio 2's Steve Wright in the Afternoon. She's written 5 books on holistic living, including the number one bestseller on Amazon, Imperfectly Natural Woman. Her latest book is a memoir. She's a one-on-one sober coach and runs training workshops for holistic sober coaches, and she is the founder of the well-being community, The Sober Club. Yep, as you guessed it, we are going to talk about alcohol and spirituality today. We're just going to get started with a little bit of background on Janie and her self-discovery of Sunday school at a Christian church, her Christian faith, the origin of the word alcohol, which is a little bit contentious, but it's still an interesting discussion, the dichotomy of alcohol and her career in well-being in the beginning of her career, her Christian faith versus Christian religion, and the role that Christian music played in her faith and her career. Wine, alcohol, right, as the blood of Christ in organized religion, as a sacrament. The associative experience of drinking alcohol and her saying, quote, keep the ritual, change the ingredients, unquote. And with that, we are going to dive right in. Let us welcome Janie.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Spirituality What podcast. This is Rebecca. I am your guide for today, and I've got a new friend here, Janie. Janie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. So I do wear quite a lot of hats, but I'll tell you just a few of the bits about me. I am an author, and I've written several well-being books, several books on holistic living. And for many years, I was a radio presenter. I was a BBC radio presenter in the UK for 24 years. Before that, I was a singer and did TV stuff. So I think it's probably fair to say that in the UK, quite a lot of people probably knew me from radio stuff, and they may have known me for talking about holistic living and well-being. But it's only in more recent years that I have realized that for all of those years that I was talking about holistic living and writing best-selling books on the topic, I was stepping around the huge elephant in the room that was alcohol. So finally, 7 years ago, I ditched the booze. And so I'm now, although I still do all of my holistic living stuff, I now have it all kind of underpinned by sobriety. And that has become hugely important for me to share my passion in that world and, you know, try and inspire people that might be sober curious, for example, focus on living their best life without alcohol. So I run the Sober Club. I've given a TEDx talk. I've written a book on the topic, and then bringing you totally up to, right up to speed. A couple of weeks ago, my memoir has just been released, called From Wham to Woo, A Life on the Mic.
Awesome. Welcome, Janie. We are very excited and interested. This is an interesting topic. So we are going to talk about alcohol and spirituality today. That's really what we're going to focus on. But before we get into the topic, I am going to ask you, Janie, the same question that I ask all of the interviewees on this podcast, which is, what does spirituality mean to you?
Yeah, it's a really great question. And I find it difficult to answer, to tell the truth. I don't know if your other guests do, because I started off as, when I was quite young, I took myself off to church. My parents didn't go to church. But I found a friend, a little friend who lived nearby, who told me that if we went to Sunday school, if we stand up and sing, we get free sweets. I thought, well, that sounds like a great idea. So I took myself along to a Christian church from a very young age and became very immersed in all of that. And I became a Christian, in inverted commas, and I do still absolutely believe that I have a Christian faith. It's very important to me. But is it what you might call a typical type of Christianity? I don't know. I actually don't know. I believe that the way I approach Christianity is much more inclusive. I certainly don't see it as anything exclusive. And my version of Christianity also links to spirituality, which I think is slightly different, but encompasses much of the same, if you like. So I believe that spirituality means being connected, having that connection with some, you know, with some source other than yourself. It's, I can't imagine how it would be to feel that you don't have any kind of spiritual component in your life. I think it would feel very empty. For me, having something outside of myself feels really essential. And having that sort of sense of spiritual connection for me is critically important. Yeah, does that kind of answer it? It's a bit of a messy answer. But...
No, absolutely, it's great, and it's interesting. We get all kinds of different answers, but what you said there about you can't imagine what it would feel like to not have that component. We did a podcast episode with a couple of atheist friends of mine, and one of them admitted that it's very lonely.
It's a
very lonely place to be. And I found that fascinating and sad. I don't know. I felt bad that they felt so lonely in that way.
Mm.
Yeah, but it was
years ago, I did, I was doing a TV show. I was presenting a religious, if you like, TV show. And one of the topics that we covered was the crisis prayer, if you like. So the prayer that might be said in a crisis. And we did a whole bunch of research. And what we discovered was even people who say they have absolutely no belief in God or source or anything at all, in a crisis would still pray.
Mm.
Fascinating. You know, huge percentage of people admitted that if they were actually in a crisis, they'd still pray because, you know, what have you got to lose?
Yeah.
Is anybody listening? You know, come on, bring it on.
Exactly. Like if it has any chance of helping and things are out of your control and out of your hands. Yeah. Oh, that is really interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So we are going to jump into our topic today. And I wanted to kind of start with the basics around alcohol, just so we're all setting a foundation. A lot of people know what alcohol is, but you mentioned in another podcast the definition or the origin of the word alcohol, and I'd love to kind of start there.
There is a school of thought. I have to caveat this because if people start Googling it, they'll find that there are other interpretations. But there is one definition, if you like, that the word alcohol comes from the origin of the word is alkul, A-L-K-H-U-L. And there is a translation of that as flesh-eating spirit, which is, you know, not ideal, is it really? And I found that very fascinating when I first read that, and it got me thinking, wow, you know, there's a reason they're called spirits. And that was around the same time that I was doing, you know, just kind of starting my training and sober coaching and a whole bunch of things. And I realized that so many people say, oh, she's not herself when she's been drinking. Oh, he has no memory of what, you know, that people will say, oh, I was completely drunk. I didn't recognize myself. I have no idea what I said. And, you know, there is this kind of school of thought that says maybe they really weren't themselves. It depends how spooky you want to get with all of this. But I do think, you know, that there's a double-edged kind of nature to alcohol. And there is an interpretation of alcohol as being spiritually consuming, and perhaps even, you know, links with entities. You know, we don't know for sure. I have to caveat all of that by saying that I've also seen, if you Google deep enough, you will also see stuff that says actually that's not true. It doesn't translate as that. It translates as a refined substance that has morphed over time. I've seen it spoken about like that as well. So you know, I can't honestly say, you know, that I know for sure. But what I do think is interesting is that clearly the stuff we talk about now, people finding it very difficult to connect spiritually when they've been drinking, that makes sense when you think of it like that. For me personally, I know that I, you know, despite knowing pretty much everything there was to know about spirituality and meditation, for example, because I was a Hay House author and a Hay House presenter, and I used to present on Hay House Radio. So I would interview just about everybody, you know, from your Wayne Dyer to Louise Hay.
Cool. So
on paper, I had all the stuff, I had all the questions, I had all the knowledge, I had all the answers around meditation, around self-love, around spirituality, all of it. And yet, if you'd asked me personally about my own practice, I'm ashamed to say I would have had to have said, oh, I don't do any of it. You know, I can't do any of it. And of course, that's not because I didn't want to. It's because I literally couldn't. I literally could not sit for 5 seconds in meditation. Because if I did, a very loud voice would instantly tell me, you know, you're not authentic. You know, you better get up and put some washing on or do a shopping list, because you're not going to sit in silence because you're not authentic. And it took me years to realize that that was the alcohol piece, that, you know, putting in toxic liquid into my body, poisoning myself literally every goddamn day, literally blocked that channel of connection for me.
Interesting. Well, it's interesting. I love, whatever, even if it's not true, I find that translation and that origin intriguing, right? For a couple of reasons. One, you said flesh eating, right? I mean, doesn't alcohol literally eats away at your liver? Like, if you are an alcoholic, you can die because your liver stops working. So that, I mean, that has some truth to it anyway. I mean, it's not your skin when you talk about flesh, but it's like an organ in your actual body that the alcohol is destroying, in addition to your brain, right? So there's that, you mentioned, like, people don't recognize themselves or they black out. It's very interesting that a substance can make it such that your physical body is still working. You're saying things, you're moving, you're whatever. You're interacting with people, but for some reason it does something to disconnect you from yourself. Not even from, from spirituality too, but like literally from yourself.
Well, it can literally be as if you are possessed.
Yeah.
That's the really scary part. If we get that sense, it was very interesting for me once. I went to see therapist many years. I've spoken in my books about how for many years I would see therapists and have different treatments and therapies and stuff. And if I felt confident and safe with the person, I sometimes would ask them about my drinking. And by the way, I never got the right answer, which would have been, you know, oh, well done you for noticing. Let me point you in the direction of, you know, some resources that might help you. You know, well done you. I didn't need them to say, you know, they weren't drinking. I didn't need that. I just needed them to acknowledge how brave I had to be to mention it, you know.
Yeah.
But I never ever got that answer. The only answers I ever got were, oh well, you know, have an alcohol free day, or one therapist actually said to me, maybe switch from wine to vodka, you know, it's better for you. Like, you have to be kidding me. Anyway, that's another whole topic. But one woman I saw who was an energy healer, I mean, amazing at her work, amazing. But all she could find to say to me when I brought this up was, you know, she kind of tuned in and she said, yeah, you know, I think you might have an entity. And I remember thinking, oh, for God's sake, please, God, I've got enough going on. Don't,
for God's sake, don't
tell me I'm possessed as well. But of course, now, all these years on, I'm now starting to think, you know what, she might have been right. It's just a terrible shame she couldn't find a way to help me. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, don't just tell me that and then leave me.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck. I'll send you on your way. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And you talked about in the beginning your Christian upbringing. Do you identify? You said
Christian faith. Completely
okay.
Different to upbringing.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't brought up like that, okay. But it was my choice. Yeah. Yeah.
So are you still active in a religious context today? Or are you
Yeah, you see, I never really did get involved in religion. This is where I think it all gets so very tricky, because for me, Christianity isn't, I don't perceive it as religion. I think we've got such terrible, there are so many terrible connotations around religion. It seems to be about rules and dogma and, you know,
yeah.
And my Christian faith is nothing to do with that. And, you know, for many years, for most of my life, in truth, I haven't been part of anything in any way organized. It hasn't worked for me. You know, it just hasn't worked for me. I was never able to find the right church, in inverted commas. I did for a time, but then I was going off touring with bands and stuff. And what was really interesting for me was I held on to my Christian faith really by a thread, if you like, by discovering Christian music. So at a young age, you know, when I was interested in pop music and bands and stuff, I started going to a festival in the UK called the Greenbelt Christian Arts Festival. And that became like my church. I was so passionate about this, about Christian music, about the whole idea of being able to be, you know, a young person sort of dancing to fantastic music that happened to be being made by Christians, you know, and some of them were cool, you know, some of them, not all of them. Some of it was terrible, but some of it was good. And then I went off and did lots of music biz stuff. I wasn't involved in any kind of church. Because it just didn't fit who I was. None of it fitted who I was. And then I got my very first radio job. When I first started working in radio, my very first radio job was as a gospel music presenter. And it came about completely by accident. I just went to a mainstream radio station and said, here I am, I've done some training, I want to work in radio, can I make the tea for you? What can I do? And they said, we haven't got anything. We've got no, you know, we don't even need anyone to answer the phones. And then it's like, oh, okay. And he started walking away and then turned around and said, well, I don't suppose you know anything about gospel music, do you? Christian music. He said it with such disdain. And I said, yeah, what do you want to know? It's my absolute passion, actually. What do you want to know? Do you want to know about the Christian bands in the US or the ones in the UK? Or what do you want to know? And he said, oh, well, the girl who does the gospel show needs some help. And that's how I got started in radio. And I sometimes laugh about that, because it's almost as though God was kind of saying, you know what, I'm going to kind of hang on to you. I'm going to keep that thread going for you, even if I have to give you a goddamn job in radio.
Yeah.
So that was kind of how it went. And now, you know, all these years on, I'm not part of a church, but I still have a faith. And, you know, I think that's okay. I think we all make it work for ourselves, yeah. Really.
Absolutely. And I totally agree. I love that you are talking about like a music as your church. I think I've mentioned it before on the podcast, but I live in Colorado. Red Rocks Amphitheater is effectively, like 90 minutes. Like, it's really not very far from where I am. And every time I see a concert there, I feel like I'm at like having a spiritual experience. And I've called it my church to a couple of my friends before, and they're just like, that's so interesting. I'm like, I don't know. It feels like music is so connecting. Like, it just, it feels so good. So I identify with that a lot. And I also agree with you, and we've said this on the podcast before too, it's really important for people to make their own way from a spiritual perspective. Mm. And I think I am not associated with any churches. I don't foresee that ever in my future, But I know that some people that really works for, right? And I also know that there are a lot of people that go to church that aren't spiritual at all. So they're,
You know, like they're,
they don't have to go together either, which is kind of really interesting. So talking about church, what are your thoughts on, I think it's Christian and, or maybe it's Catholic. I'm butchering it here, right? But the people who are like, wine is the representation of the blood of Christ. So now we are also talking about alcohol in organized religion. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a definitive answer for this. I mean, I don't really. I know that, you know, you're right. Wine's been used in, you know, Christian traditions, Catholic traditions, the Jewish tradition, as far as I'm aware. And it's symbolic, isn't it? It's, you know, it was used at the Last Supper to represent Christ's blood. And it's central to that, you know, sacrament of the Eucharist. I wish I had a good argument for this. I don't really. My own personal view is that if I, as and when I do go to church, I will take communion wine. And for me, that is a world apart from going around the local, you know, deli and downing half a bottle of Sauvignon because I need to get away from the kids, and then coming home and downing another half a bottle so that I can get over the fact that I've just had a really difficult conversation with my mother. It's a world apart.
It's the set and the setting.
I think we're talking about the same animal.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so it's a sacrament. It's a sacrament. It has symbolic meaning, and we take a sip. We don't drink a goddamn bottle and then wake up feeling shit at 3 a.m., right? It's completely different. Just like, you know, one might look at, you know, tobacco. And you know, tobacco has rituals associated with it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to, you know, go for those rituals and then go and smoke a packet of cigarettes. You know? I think the two things are separate.
Yeah.
I really
and
do.
And you bring up a great point. I think the same could be applied to psychedelic, you know, plant.
Yes, absolutely.
Like in a ceremonial context.
Absolutely.
That's called.
That's exactly
plant
it.
Medicine.
That's exactly,
you know,
it.
But at a party.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this kind of flows through the idea that our bodies can handle a small amount of anything, and that can even be beneficial. So, you know, a small amount of you know, plant medicine, whether that's whatever, you know, ayahuasca or whatever the hell it is, you know, can be used to great effect once, you know, or in moderation.
Yeah.
But it's not something you do every goddamn day because you're having lunch.
True.
Right? Or you're trying to numb out from something.
Yeah.
It's very much linked to the what you're using whatever this is for.
Intention.
And where we've got terribly confused is that we, you know, what everyone talks about having, you know, a glass of wine, but it's never a glass of wine because it's addictive. And if you have a glass and it's all about the associations. You're not having that glass of wine because you need a glass of wine. You're having a glass of wine because you want to feel better or numb out from something, or you think it's celebratory, or you think it will help you with your grief. Or it's never for its own sake. Because no one would choose alcohol for its own sake. It's only ever about the association.
That's so interesting, because you
until
were like...
Until you're so far down the booze elevator that then you don't care. I mean, for most of us, we would, if we're regular drinkers, when I was drinking regularly, I mean, I'm talking every single day. If you'd, and so you could call me completely, you know, addicted. It was never clinically dependent. I was never at rock bottom, but I was drinking every single day. Okay. It was a habit that I had, you know, there was like a, it was just ingrained in me. However much I tried to stop, it was a habit. And I felt I needed that alcohol. And a voice in my head would say, oh, you've had such a busy day. You know, you deserve it. You need it. So I would go and have that alcohol. But the interesting thing is, if you'd have, you know, for whatever reason, I'd have come to your house and, you know, you'd have said, oh, okay, you know, well, it's 6 p.m., you know, would you like a glass of wine? Oh, God, yeah, please. If you'd handed it to me and it was a really naff bottle of wine that was really old and sweet and not cold. And then you'd said, I've only got plastic cups. Sorry, all my glasses are put away. I'm moving house or whatever you can make up. But you basically hand me a broken plastic cup with warm wine in. I don't want that. Of course I don't want that. That's not what I want. That's horrible. I don't want that. I don't want to go and sit in a skip drinking alcohol either. Thank you very much. So it was never actually the alcohol I wanted, was it? It was only ever the associations. Yeah. I want a nice glass. I want it to be cold. I want it to feel like I'm grown up. It's only the associations, really. But our mind tricks us into thinking, oh, no, it has to be alcohol.
It's really interesting because when you said you can't only have one, and I was like, in my head, I was like, well, what about like a toast, a champagne toast? Like most of the time, I think people only have one. But then when you were like, the celebratory association, because it's like you have champagne when you're celebrating and when you're cheersing, you know, like at a wedding. And it's again, if you filled all of those glasses with sparkling apple juice, everyone probably would do the same thing. You know, it doesn't matter what.
Well, that's exactly what I do. I mean, that's my mantra is keep the ritual, change the ingredients. I absolutely believe that we want that nice glass and we want that celebratory feel as adults. You know, we do like a nice drink in a nice glass. It is about the associations. So I'm a really big fan of alcohol-free drinks. And I think everyone should find one they like. If you don't want a replacement, you know, because you think, oh, well, it looks like wine, then great, have a kombucha or something, but have it in a nice glass. It really drives me bonkers that glasses need to be named after alcoholic substances. How crazy is that? Why should a lovely shaped glass have to be called a wine glass? It's just a bloody glass, right? So, you know, that really annoys me. But meanwhile, you know, I wherever I go, I'll say, oh, I'll have a sparkling water or whatever, and I'd like it in a wine glass, please. Because I don't want a tumbler just because I'm not drinking alcohol. I don't want a pint glass just because I'm not drinking alcohol. It's crazy the way you're made to feel second class because, you know, everyone else has got their lovely champagne flutes. And if you're not drinking alcohol, they give you a bloody great pint glass.
It might even be plastic.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that needs to change. It really does. But it is all about the associations. But I do think, you know, the whole thing, you know, now we're on the topic, the whole thing of associations and having a nice glass is actually key. It's key to the success if you quit an alcohol. Because I've had a lot of clients that will say to me, oh, I know I've heard you talk about alcohol-free drinks and everything, but you know, you don't need to worry about me. I'm really good with my cup of tea. Love my cup of tea. Not a problem at all. I don't need to go there. And then I'll say to them, well, you just wait and see. There will come a time when your friends are all chinking glasses or someone's celebrating or someone's commiserating or someone, you know, X and Y. And there's the chink of the glass. Everyone's popping a cork. Everyone's doing this with a lovely glass. And you've got your cup of tea. And your unconscious mind will say, well, this is not fair. And you'll get that sense of deprivation. So have, you know, something you like up your sleeve for when that happens.
That is I've never even really thought about that. I drink a lot less. I am gluten-free and I like beer a lot. I like the flavors of dark beer. So I drink a lot less because I was drinking a lot of beer when I was drinking. But you're right. I actually went on a trip to Miami a couple of weeks ago and the glasses were gorgeous. The non-alcoholic glasses, they had tahine and fun stuff around the rim and they had rinds of things inside, like they were absolutely beautiful. And I didn't realize until just now that how happy I was like about that.
And that does it for our episode, part one of a two-part series on alcohol and spirituality. Join us next week and we will wrap up this conversation. See you then. Thank you for joining me on today's spirituality adventure. Subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. Visit us on Instagram at spirituality.what to interact, tell us what spirituality means to you, and even provide some of your own personal musings. Human on, you phenomenal spiritual beings.